This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. When you want the best, you have to act fast, especially when hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people before the competition scoops them up. And the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds top talent fast. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Spotify. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My first sentence, my mum came to visit me, my very first visit, and she said to me, "Oh, be careful who you're hanging around with." And in my head, I was thinking, like, I'm in jail, like, these are the people who I'm around with, I have to make do. But it's mad, the stereotype of people on the outside to being inside and having relationships with them. Like, even now, I find myself defending people in jail, like, that maybe I might know, etc., because the perception is so different. When you're in there with someone and you get to know them, it's so different. Like, someone could be in for XYZ, and the public outside could see them as a wrong one, but you can know them personally and see that, like, they do have good in them.
So last week we were chatting about relationships on the outside.
Yeah.
So should we continue this week with relationships on the inside?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good. Okay. I think the most obvious relationship that comes to mind is cellmates for me.
Yeah. Cellmates.
It's probably the first and most, well, especially in, it's the first relationship you build, I think, in there. And then it's definitely the most significant one in the sense that you've got to spend most of your time.
A lot of time with that person.
Yeah, 100%.
It's the most important in that sense, because if that one's bad, you're in for a torrid time.
I think in some sense, your cellmate, it becomes like your brother. They become like family because you literally live with them the same way. You live with your family.
And you don't choose them like family.
So. Yeah, it's true. It's true as well. It's true. Because, like, if I look back
and at you all... And you've got to watch some shit.
100%. Smell their shit. It doesn't
Hang get... Hang on. What kind of relationship have you got with your... I don't remember the last time I watched my brother have a shit.
Exactly. So it's even more personal then.
Even more it's personal.
It's even more personal.
Is what I was getting at, Rob.
It's even more personal. Because, like, you're with them all the time. They see
Christmases there.
Yeah, they see all your emotions. Like, you can be on the wing and put a brave face on, but they know when you're down and stuff like that in yourself.
Yeah.
It is very personal. So you become very close to yourself.
And you must have had good and bad cellmates. What makes a good cellmate?
Someone that's patient. Someone that is. I'm not describing a girlfriend as well. Someone's just got etiquette. Someone that just, because even little things like...
That's a big one.
Yeah, because, like, little things like, don't fart when I'm eating. Like, is that... No, but that's a big thing. If you're eating in a cell, you can't be farting and going shit and doing all of that stuff.
But it's funny, some people don't care about that stuff.
Yeah, it's true. For little things like that, it's like, that little bit of etiquette.
Just some base standards.
Yeah. I think...
Yeah. It's funny, little things like that. I've not really had to consider that much since I've been out or before. But yeah, someone not having a shit in the room while you're eating dinner.
That's quite an obvious one, I'd say.
That's a big
Imagine how fumy you'd be.
I can imagine.
You'd be fucking raging. You're about to eat, you're starving, and then the food...
But you're a bit of a clean freak.
No, but come on.
I don't think that just goes on clean freak.
Someone farts when... If someone even farts or burps when you're eating, you're thinking, ugh, it's nasty.
What about a talker?
But it's also that stuff that even if it's not like a big immediate no-no, if someone does that 200 days in a row, that might piss you off. So you got to remember, like, you know, you could be sharing with someone
just
for
marriage.
It's
brother/husband.
It's a very odd sexless marriage, basically.
Yeah.
some people I know.
What about talkers? Do you want a talker? Do you not want a talker?
That's the thing. You need someone that knows when to talk. As in, you don't want to be padded up with someone that talks all the time when you're watching TV. they've got to kind of understand. I think for me, I had like a routine where if I there's times where I wanted to be quiet in the day, there's times where I wanted to talk. So I think they kind of have to.
I had
understand your program.
I completely agree. My first cellmate was an Albanian lad who didn't speak English. So that was its own challenge. So I shared with him for 3 weeks. And he literally, it was like pidgin English. We tried a few times to try and have some kind of conversation. He was a nice lad. He was young. But he literally had like 3 words of English. And that was in Wandsworth. So it was like 23 hours a day minimum in the room with him. And I like talking. So that became, that was genuinely really hard, because I think probably it slightly drove me a bit nuts in that 3 weeks. Because
did you resort to Pictionary?
Pardon?
Did you resort to Pictionary?
We resorted to him teaching me Albanian swear words and me trying to teach him English ones.
Right.
That was the sort of base level of we were at. And I can say, hey guys, in Albanian now.
Come on then.
Washipa.
Clever.
Multilingual.
Lovely intonation there at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, because I don't speak Albanian, but I'll take your word.
But that was tough, because then he'd like put on like some utter shit on TV. But obviously he doesn't know it's utter shit. He can't understand like,
what did he watch?
They're saying.
What did he put on
like ITV4, you know, it's like the Avengers, but again, not the like film, like the 60s TV show. Put that on, which is just the absolute pitch.
I thought you would have liked stuff like that, to be fair.
Well, I know you would have, but I didn't.
Didn't you?
No. And there was like, other stuff, but my logic was I'd let him have the TV in that crappy period when there's nothing on, because then come 9 o'clock,
daybreak,
yoink. You've had your 6 hours, mate.
Were you good cellmates?
I think I was, to be fair, because
I think you would be. You would be. You're tidy.
I'm very neat.
Maybe a little bit too. Maybe you wouldn't be. You're a little bit too tidy.
No, but I would never clean up someone else's mess. I'd just be angry inside. I'd just be angry inside looking.
So you're the wife in this picture. Casual sexism there, sorry.
I spoke when spoken to. I didn't really initiate conversation that much unless I genuinely wanted to talk.
Fucking hell, I'm glad we never shared, mate.
You all know how I feel about the TV as well, so I wasn't fussed about TV. Unless football was on or something like that, something that was going to be quite decent to watch. Only thing is, I used to like to be on the phone, but I'd be on the phone at times where nothing good was on TV, or I'd try and get the phone call done as early as possible. Okay. So I was quite considerate. You have to be considerate to be a good...
It had to be considerate.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Which, I think that's probably like number one. And it's difficult. So you had like, even if people consider that, it's quite tricky. Because I remember Al shared with someone who was like a devout Muslim. So he would get up twice in the middle of the night to pray and wake Al up. And he was like, well, look, I completely understand. Like, he has to do that. But it doesn't change the fact it's fucking annoying getting woken up at 1 in the morning. But so there's like, it puts in there like a weird little dynamic where even with the best will in the world, you can end up pissing someone off.
Yeah, I think it's a strange thing as well. Being in jail, obviously your head's gone being away. But you have to be considerate to the person you're with as well, because you can't fight with them, because if you fight, it's going to disrupt your time and it's going to make your time harder. So you have to be really considerate. You have to be very respectful and very mindful not to upset the person you're with, because ultimately you're living with them. You don't want to piss them off. You just want to have the best possible time in your cell, because that's the place where you are the most.
I don't think there is one kind of like dream cellmate necessarily. I think there are some kibits like cleanliness for some people. But then for other people, they might be the messiest cunts in the world, and so they might not want someone that's like a clean freak, because they'll just grate on each other. So again, I was said with someone in Rochi, and he was, I mean, their cell was like a bomb had gone off in there. It was...
I'd hate that.
It was like aggressively untidy.
But you haven't even got that much stuff. I don't understand how you can get that messy.
You have enough stuff by that point. Like sea cats, so they'd like had enough, and his cellmate had been in for a while and was just food everywhere, clothes everywhere, toilet was a mess, never cleaned the toilet, and used to drive out wild. Like, his cellmate would get up at 1 in the morning to eat a midnight snack of a pack of biscuits.
1 a.m. snack.
Yeah. So then I had cellmates that I wouldn't have thought I'd have got on with, and I got on absolutely fine with. So it's ones that you weren't, you don't necessarily think you're that compatible. Like, you know,
whether, what made you think that you weren't compatible with them?
You're just different, you know, like different. But then you got, so okay, so in when I was in Highdown, the one cellmate I had there really for a long time, he was absolutely nuts. That guy, like, you know, was, I think he had ADHD. I think he had dyspraxia. He told me he was 6 a.m. He'd be up and about. He was. So he refused to ever watch TV because he had his TV taken off him so many times. He didn't want to have that power, so he just never watched it. But he'd be up, he'd be on his phone, he'd be doing deals out, on the out. He'd be trying to get me to wrestle him. He'd be doing press-ups. He'd be making food. He had minimum 13 arguments with his girlfriend a day.
Yeah.
I mean, poor, long-suffering girlfriend would just get C-bombs dropped at her left, right, and Chelsea, and then 30 seconds later, I'll call back and sorry, babe. And so, do you mean, like, but so on paper, you go, that guy's a nightmare. But we actually got on, like, a house on fire. Like, yeah. And I had, and that was the thing for me. I really struggled with the ones who were, like, quiet and didn't want to talk or do anything. The ones that I could interview.
Surprisingly.
I can see the shock on Claire's face there.
But that's the thing, though, as well.
But it's incredible. So for me, people that I could just fuck around with, talk shit with, have a laugh with, that I could actually get some enjoyment out. It, for me, I struggled with the ones where I had to sit there with my own thoughts for 20 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you mean, but all joking aside, that was what I struggled with. So anyone that I could just have a bit of a laugh with and just keep it light, I think that was like the key for me to what made like a good cellmate. And so,
but going back to what Rob said as well, for me, you have to be with someone that doesn't smell, because if you was in, no, it's true. That's such a big thing.
Yeah.
I've seen people get kicked out of their cell because their cellmate can't stand their body odor. Like, it's a big thing. But I'm also talking about what Rob said. It just goes to show that, like Rob was saying, he couldn't be around people that are quiet. But that just goes to show, in jail, you start to realise that everyone's different. Some people like to talk and have a good laugh to get through their buzz. Some people like to be quiet and do their own thing. And it kind of like, it's mad that the right people kind of gravitate towards you.
Right.
Like you can, like he said, you wouldn't necessarily think that you'd be mates with someone who's a madman. But it's something about the aura in jail. I don't know how to say it. In jail, it's all different types of people that attract you. You could
It's like the real world, but you're, in the real world, you're not locked in a small room with someone for 23 hours a day that often. So
yeah.
I think you have to find, I think there's also an element of you sort of have to adapt. So I definitely found, like with a couple of cellmates, you sort of had to dial it down a bit and you realise, okay, they don't want to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you can't like force your agenda on them, I don't think. Like, yeah. Like, a couple where they're like, right, okay, this is quiet time. And you have to, like, and if you don't learn, you do hear it, like, people just don't want to do it, so they just end up having fights.
Right.
And that's how that happens, because someone gets so pissed off, I'm trying to watch the fucking TV, and, you know, and someone won't shut up or whatever. That's how that happens. So, you know, thankfully.
Boarding school prepares you quite well.
100% it did, 100%. Because back in school, if you piss someone off enough, you got beaten up. That's how stuff got largely dealt with back then. And so you sort of, I think that sort of mindset was triggered in me there, that you sort of, I was definitely... You know, I was probably a lot quieter in prison, you know, just because you don't want to piss someone off.
Yeah, you learn a lot about different personalities. You learn a lot about different personalities, 100%.
Did you ever feel at risk from your cellmate?
Never. I don't know, did you, Rob?
Once.
Did you?
But only because, so he'd got put in with me, so he was in for murder.
Yeah.
And when he told me that, like, just, I'd only been in prison for... like a month, I think, at that point. And it just triggers in your head. So you're just like, he'd been in the seg for 2 weeks. He got, like, come back in and we're chatting. And he was like, oh, how long have you been in for? And I was like, oh, just a month. And I was like, how long have you been in for? And he went, oh, 11. And I'm thinking, like, oh, 11 months. At this point, he's shaving his head in the mirror. And we had a separate toilet there. And he was like, oh, I'm in for murder. Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, that actually stops you dead. And then you're like, fuck. And then you're like, yeah, it's the first time I'd really encountered someone with him for a serious violent crime. And you do sort of go, and he was a big lad. He was a, you know, and then I think we'd already had chat at that point. So I knew he'd been like selling drugs on the wing and stuff. So then you start filling in the blanks a bit. And you're, so I definitely, at that point, you're then shit, right? Okay, this guy's. You know, so you don't know the circumstances of the offence. You don't know anything like that. So you're yeah, I definitely felt threatened. But then weirdly...
But is that because of the stereotype or not because of him? Not actually because of him?
Yeah, not because of him. Yeah, no, just because you're in with a guy. I didn't know anything about the label, his background.
Yeah.
I had no reason to believe he was going to harm me. So in that sense, so not in that sense. But yeah, I felt like that was, you know... But then fast forward 24 hours, we were quite good mates. You know, we got on quite well. I mean, I should say, so he told me that. He then came out and asked me if he'd missed any. He wet shaved his head because he'd been away. And he said, have I missed any? There's a big strip down the back of his head that he's missed. And I've gone, oh, fuck. What do I do here? Like, I can't. If I tell him, no, you got it all, he's going to walk around the wings like a mug. and that's not going
to
end well for me.
He's coming back to you.
But then I know that if I tell him he has, I know what happens next is he went, right, you got to do it for me. So 5 minutes after I've met this lad, I'm trying to wet shave the back of his head. Going, fucking hell, do not cut his head. Just shaking like a shitting dog, going, oh my God. And thankfully it went all right. Anyway, so we then had a bit of a chat, and then I was reading a book on my bunk, so he was like, oh, can I watch TV? And then he put on A Muppet's Christmas Carol and thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever watched. And at this point, I was convinced I was not going to last through the night. I mean, I was like, this is me done. Can you imagine how much I was shitting myself?
Yeah, of course, 100%.
but then we ended up getting on well. So, yeah, but no, I never had an incident where I was threatened by a cellmate or anything like that.
But that's one thing what jail taught me as well, is like not to judge, depending on someone's sentence. Because I was padded up with a lifer as well and got on with him like a house on fire. Like, he was such a nice guy. Like I was saying to you lot earlier, that he had an obsession with dogs. Like, there's times where he'd be describing things, you could see the excitement. So I actually got my missus to send pictures in of dogs, and when he got them, he was so happy. Like, he put them up on the wall and everything. Like, and like, it just goes to show that, like, even he was halfway through his sentence, he'd done 11 years, and in my head I was thinking, fuck, he's got 11 more years to do. But like, being with him all the time and knowing him, and even we've spoken about his crime and stuff, and you think, like, I don't know much, but I was thinking, fuck, surely he's learnt his lesson. Like, surely he's done enough now. Like, he's learnt his lesson. He's sorry for what he's done, and et cetera, et cetera. But it just goes to show.
It definitely changed your perception of your relationship with that kind of person, where whether it softens you, I don't know if that's the right word, but it definitely...
You have more understanding.
People are people.
You meet them as a person.
Yeah.
And I think...
Well, you've got common ground.
Yeah,
you're all in there together.
Yeah,
exactly. There is that kind of like bond in that sense. You're like, you're all in the same boat. I think that definitely underpins a lot of your relationships with guys in there. But it's weird, isn't it? Those long term, like the lifers or people on long term sentences. You see how it affects like their mindset. Like the guy talking about I shared with the murderer. He'd been in for 11 years at that point, and. Yeah, it's funny how there's like an innocence to it in a way, and that they've been so sheltered from that. Like, so you say, like, they can develop, like you said, your mate had a thing with dogs, but like mine was like obsessed with like what he was going to do when he got out, like what car he was going to get when he got out. And he'd like got similarly, like looking at like Jeeps and stuff, or like, and like, I think he had a smartphone in there, and you know, like everyone assumes he probably was doing naughty stuff with it, but he was also looking up on Auto Trader the cost of a second-hand Jeep.
Like, quite childlike, like.
So it's really weird that kind of stuff. And he was like, so he'd say things to me like, he's like, so when I get out, do I have like one iPod for my car and one for like walking around and stuff? And so this is in 2017. I was like, no one's got iPods, mate. It'll all be on your phone. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
And so there is a weird kind of. I don't know if innocence is the right word, but there's like a naivety. They've been sheltered for so long that you meet them, and that, which definitely struck me when I met a few of those guys.
But another thing, I don't know, I think this is kind of on topic, but I remember my first sentence, my mum came to visit me, the very first visit, and she said to me, be careful who you're hanging around with. And in my head I was thinking, like, I'm in jail, like, these are the people who I'm around with, I have to make do. But it's mad, the stereotype of people on the outside to being inside and having relationships with them, like, even now, I find myself defending people in jail, like that maybe I might know, etc. Because the perception is so different when you're in there with someone and you get to know them. It's so different. Like, someone could be in for XYZ, and the public outside could see them as a wrong'un, but you can know them personally and see that like they do have good in them. Like,
but a lot of people, I think often for people on the outside, and I probably had it before I went in is people, the first thing they see is their crime, and sometimes that's the only thing they see about them is what crime they've committed. Whereas when you're in there, sometimes you never even know what crime they've committed.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's weird, like you don't always, before I went in, I basically realised, I think we established, like, we went in, that our sort of rule in my head was, if someone asks you what you've done, you can ask them.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you just got chatting about the football or something, you don't then go, oh, mate, what are you in for? Like, yeah. So you never do it. So I ended up...
What did you get for GCSE results?
So that's it. So, yeah, I had quite a lot of friendships in there with people where I never knew and I still don't know what they did.
Yeah.
And I had it with a couple of people, like a couple of the lifers, and you sort of knew, you know, one of them in particular stands out there. I knew he was a lifer, so I knew he was probably in for murder. But I didn't know the circumstances surrounding it until just before I left. And I think definitely if I had known that when I first met, before I met him, I'd have had a completely different relationship with him. Whereas, you know, I just knew him as the lads who, you know.
But kind of when you're in there, you just judge, you take people for face value. Like you're with them, you have to live with them. You try not to make perceptions in your head. Like you just want to just get on with everyone. So you don't want to look at anyone different. You know you're not on the wing with like...
Well, you also need people to do the same to you. That's the realization, is that you're bringing, you've got to let down your own prejudices, but you're asking people to do the same.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, when we was at Rochester, we knew we weren't on a wing where there was going to be Bacons or like sexual offenders. So we kind of knew everyone in here for not similar crimes, but we're all in here together, so we're similar.
Yeah. You're all in that same kind of
Yeah,
we're all in the same.
Yeah.
You never shared with each other?
No.
Shared with each other? I can share with Rob.
No.
I actually don't know if that would have worked.
I can share with him. I walked past his cell too many times. It was too messy. He was actually so messy.
But you did meet for the first time
in prison. Yeah, we did, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is where we need to get into. Also, I was going to say about perceptions, and this is not on the same level, but I'm going to say it.
Yeah, go on.
I had it the other way because I was, you know, perceived in sub by some as being different to a lot of the people in prison because I'm MC, as boats would call it. You know, I'm from a different background, perhaps, as a lot of them. And you definitely saw that. Like, people didn't know what to make of me.
Yeah.
And it took a little while till they realised I was a really shit bloke. It took longer than maybe most. But I think, there's definitely... I think, I don't know, what was your first impression of me and Al?
Two posh boys, two busy buds. Obviously, Al just used to walk up and down.
Obviously, our reputation, I mean, we were known as the posh Maffin.
Yeah, they were posh.
By us.
What are these posh
just
boys doing in jail?
People start calling it.
But it's mad. Yeah, you just think, what are these posh boys doing here? But when you start talking to them, you start, where their backgrounds were kind of sporty as well. The banter was sort of the same. And it's mad because I would have thought that, what am I going to talk to these lot about? Mm. They come from a different lives to me. But we could banter and we used to have a laugh all the time. So that's what kind of brought us close. And in jail, that's the thing that gets most people through the day, banter. Like, a lot of people think everyone's in there just fighting, but banter is one of the main things that gets people through it.
It's boys club, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
you basically gravitate towards, you hear, overhear, you know, you might have people telling the same kind of stories you tell. It's like the world's worst pub. It is just a load of lads sitting around swapping war stories.
Yeah.
And like that is what you gravitate to. Like, you find common ground, whether it's sport or going on the piss or, you know, going to Ibiza or, you know, like anything like that. Like, that is as simple as it sounds, that is sort of what you sort of gravitate to, and you realise that, oh, these lads, they're from a different background to me, but we've got similar interests.
And it's so funny how, like, you could be on a wing, let's say for a wing, you cliques kind of form. Like, so I would be with the posh boys or with a few others. We'd all like be together. We'd eat together.
Eat together. You were not in the tripod. Right. It was me, Alan Bazza, cooking up veg every day.
They couldn't cook, so I didn't want to be in there. I didn't want to be in their food boat. So that's the real reason.
They talk about that. Food boat is that was an expression for you'd all lump in together. So we would, hang on, when you say we could not cook, did you ever have our tuna burgers?
Tuna burgers? No, I didn't.
And they are, I actually have been meaning to get around to cook those because they
are out
and out delicious. They're one of the best meals I've eaten. So Barry was a hell of a cook.
Come on, give us the recipe. We all need to hear
this. This is what I said inside. I said, Baz needs to do a cookbook because he would do a mean tuna curry And this is all cooked in a microwave. That's all he's got to do. All yeah. cooked in a washing up bowl in a microwave.
You're and we'd have it to sound. Cook.
The worst bit was chopping veg, was because you only had a plastic knife, so you had to turn it into a serrated edge with your nail clippers so that you could actually cook an onion. I beg you now, go and get a 1p white plastic knife and try and chop three onions with it.
I don't use single-use plastic, to be honest
exactly.
with you.
So we'd do that. So we made tuna burgers, which were genuinely delicious, tuna curries, omelets every day.
Come on, we want one recipe for your top dish.
Tuna curry.
Come on then.
Well, I'm not the. I was commie chef. I was chopping.
You were just eating chopping by the sounds of it. You don't even know what went in it.
We will get Barry. I'll get Barry to sort us out with the full recipe.
Another reason why I didn't want to be in a food bowl because they never used to wash their hands or wear gloves when they were cooking as well.
We wash our hands, mate.
Gloves is quite extreme, Mike.
No, but when you're chopping
onions, mate, I'm not doing open heart surgery. I mean, what do you...
everyone's different, isn't it? Different walks of life, isn't it?
Well, okay. You know, we know where your hands have been, mate. Not all of us have been plugging phones up our arse.
That's you, not me.
Far, bro.
Not
me.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So you still speak to each other, obviously.
Yeah.
What about other people you met?
Yeah, I've still keep in contact with quite a few people. And that life who I was padding up with, I still make an effort to send them letters and send them pictures and stuff. Like, I try my best to keep on top of it because I know being on the outside is so easy to get caught up with life and forget things. But to them, it makes a big difference. So I always try and like make an effort. And there's still loads of people I still talk to. Like, me and Rob, we're in a group chat now. About 6 or 7 boys, and a few of them are still in there. So, like,
we should point out that they are at open prison and allowed smartphones with WhatsApp on.
Key point.
Same. There's probably a handful. So there's probably like 6, 7 lads I'm in regular contact with. I mean, it is easy these days. Once those boys now get to open prison and are allowed a phone, they can do it. But I kept writing when I initially got out. I kept writing to a few of them. Went down for a couple of visits and stuff. So, yeah, I think you're right. Once you've been through it, and you know how important that stuff is.
Yeah. It's so mad. Even like the day before you leave, like, you make sure you give your contact details to the right people. You know, like, good for it and stuff. Mm. Like, obviously, you get some people that want your fucking details, who you know you're never going to talk to again, if you just trust him a fake number. I think I might have given Rob's number to a few people, to be fair. But yeah, you kind of know who's going to be decent. Yeah.
Rob's busy, I want to chat to them.
And what about sort of negative relationships? I guess this could be, might be cellmates that get caught up in stuff, or might just be other people on the wing. Like, you are relying a lot of your life, is not just about you keeping your head down. You are relying on other people not getting you into trouble. Did you come across those situations?
Like the time when I was in a previous episode where I was actually given a nicking for contraband found in my cell. Obviously, I didn't get found guilty. It got thrown out in my name, but you can easily get in trouble from being close to your cellmate, because same way I was living with him, he was also my friend. So I was never going to be like, when the contraband was found, I was never going to say to the gov or to the officer, it was him.
Mm.
It was kind of a thing where we had to stick together and kind of ride it out until what happened.
So even though you don't have anything that you're not meant to in your cell, you got...
Yeah.
Pull down for it, telly gets taken, you get put on basic.
Ultimately, it's teamwork.
Governor for a nicking. Yeah,
because ultimately it's teamwork. Because even if I'm in a cell and my cellmate's got a mobile phone, obviously if I'm in a cell with him, I might use it one or two times, but it's not my phone, he's using it, he's doing whatever on it. So if he gets caught with it, obviously you'd kind of think justice would serve and he'd obviously get done instead of yourself. But if not, you kind of have to stick together. Otherwise, you've got to try and get out the cell. If you're in a cell with a smoker, and you know he's smoking fumes at the night, and you might inhale it, you've got to either get out of that cell or just be ready to get piss tested and fail. So it's one of those things you just have to deal with. It's a
fine line to tread in it. It's like, because like you say, like big no, like rule number one, you're not ratting anyone out, so you can't like. So I had it with, you know, I had like two cellmates in different prisons that were selling gear out the cell. But you're like, well, I'm not going to, like, you're just there. That is just you've got to live with it. And you just got to hope you don't get caught. And if you do, you probably just keep them and hope for the best. And hope that they step up. And if it comes to crunch time, that they'll not let
take
you.
Take it for you.
Not
well,
let you write it. So you just got to, hope for the best in that.
Yeah.
And I suppose it works the other way as well, that sometimes you benefit from.
Yeah. If your cellmate's got a mobile phone, you might a couple of times just log onto your Snapchat or Instagram video call. Yeah.
No, but I got you're right. It's like
it's got to be purposeful.
I got to use one of my had a Zanka, so I wasn't on Facebook, but I was like, it meant I could ring. I had no credit, but it meant I could stay in touch with home. I also had to send his text for him because he couldn't spell.
Yeah.
So I had to send all those stuff. Yeah. And then you're like, so you do get a bit of benefit from it. But then,
yeah.
So then you're then like, well, if we get caught, like, is he going to turn around and go, oh, yeah. It is. Like,
yeah.
Because you don't know him that well at the end of the day. Like, you might have only known him for a few weeks. So yeah, it's a funny one, that.
And what about times when you didn't have a cellmate? Like, I imagine that you're sort of gagging to be by yourself. But then when you are by yourself.
It's so boring.
So that was when we got to Rochester, that was like the promised land, like the enhanced wing, down on H, single cell, shower in your cell. You're like, that is the dream, having had, what I had at that point, nearly 4 months of cellmates.
Being in someone's.
And then you get in there, and there's obvious perks to having your own cell. And then you, after that wears off, you're like, fuck, I'm locked in a room on my own for 17 hours a day. So that was our routine at Rochester. 17 hours we were banged up. And that's a long time, to, especially if you've not got phone credit or anything. Yeah, it's... on the whole, I think it was definitely better. But I think it's really difficult in a different way. Because it's just fucking dull. Sunday nights, dead.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough one. And it's difficult.
Difficult. So those are cellmates. What about relationships with staff? Governors?
Officers? Fair, I think in jail, it's a thing where the good govs get treated well. The bad govs, obviously, for people like me and Rob, who wanted to get out as quick as possible, we just stay away. Because some govs ultimately have a chip on their shoulder because where they've been doing it for a long time and they're probably fed up with certain type of prisoners. So you kind of can gauge it and you just try and stay away from them. But the good ones, you can have a laugh with, you can, yeah, they make your time easier.
Mm.
So, yeah, like what we said, Mr. Mack.
Mr. Mack?
Yeah, he was a nice guy, really nice guy. But one of the first
looked that pointed out exactly like Ric Flair.
He looked exactly like Ric Flair. He was a wrestler.
Didn't know. Oh, a wrestler.
Yeah, he was a wrestler. Okay. WWE back
then. That would explain why I don't know who it is.
He didn't know who Ric Flair was either.
Yeah. But he looked exactly like him. Like he used to even like come to my cell in the morning and like tell me football scores of a game the night before that he might have watched. And like he was just like sometimes
just a good. But yeah, he's just a good.
He might give like, you magazines nice and stuff. Like, yeah, like I feel like when you're good to them, they're good to you. So yeah, you can build a good rapport with them.
Do you just want to talk about, I guess, the setup of staff in terms of on your wings and the hierarchy of staff, just to explain it to other people?
Boats, shoot.
Okay, on the wing, the top guy is called a CM. What does a CM stand for?
Custodial manager.
He like oversees the wing. He doesn't really do much. He just stays in his office and I think just does the admin side of things on the wing. Under him is
SO.
Which is the senior officer. Senior officer just literally just has their minions, who are the POs, the personal officers, who just go around and just cater for everyone. Not cater for everyone, but just make sure there's order on the wing.
Yeah.
Everyone...
They're the bobbies on the beat.
Yeah, everyone's got their own personal officer. So there might be four personal officers on the wing, and they probably cater to a certain number per wing. And they're basically the ones that, if you have a problem, you deal with them, you go to them, you send your applications to them, etc. You have to get on with them because ultimately they're the people that can take away your enhance, sort out visits, sort out whatever you need for them.
They're the ones you have most contact with.
Yeah,
so they'll know who's causing trouble. They'll know who's being a dickhead.
Yeah.
They're the ones. So if you want a request to get onto another wing, they're the ones that will give a good reference to the CM who will ultimately decide, he can go. So in Rochester, that was it. It was about trying to get off E-wing onto H-wing. So it was like you'd have your PO you'd like chat to them, or if the CM was on the wing, you'd pester them, be like, Gov, can I, if you have my request, I'm trying to get onto H, so, and they'd then go and speak to your POs.
I think the POs are the ones that write reports about you as well, about your behaviour and stuff.
Isn't that your offender supervisor normally?
I'm not really sure because isn't the offender supervisor?
Are they offender supervisors even on your wing?
Yeah, they're like part of OMU.
That's like part
of OMU.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is separate. But so then, the personal officers are the ones that I think if they want to know, if someone in the prison wants to know what Boats is like on the wing, they'll go to your PO and they, in theory, should know about you. But but it was different. So like Rochester, that probably was the structure. But in Wandsworth, I'd see maybe like, it was so understaffed in there. Like, there was no one there. It's probably why we were banged up for so long.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the staff to manage us being out on the wing for long. But it'd maybe be... So if you want to break it down differently, so in Wandsworth, there are four floors on those big wings. You'd have maybe one officer per floor. So bear in mind, they've got to manage 60... It's probably 60 lads on a floor, on a up on the fours where we were. So you go for, 4-3-2-1s. One, maybe two. And they'd be in the end office. You'd never see them on the wing. You'd hardly have any contact with them. If you wanted anything done, they'd just go, give us an app, and they'd put it through. They didn't know you. But then when you got through to Rochester, which is obviously different category and stuff, but you'd have much more contact with them. You actually had no relationship with anyone on any screws on in Wandsworth, but got to Rochester. Like you say, there's a few handful there that you would chat to about like the football or something. That kind of stuff. So it was a very different, it was really different even between prisons, the dynamic between, us and...
And I think for them, they're in the jail as many hours as you are. So they just try and make it as easy for them as it is for you. So they try and get on with you. So it makes sense them trying to get on with you as well, because what's the point of trying to make it hard for you having fights? And they don't want to be bending people up. That's ultimately what I realised.
Some of them did.
Well, the ones on our wing, on an enhanced wing, they just want it nice and easy. They just want to go into work, just have a nice, easy day and then go home. So it's kind of made sense for them to get on with everyone. But obviously you do get some gubs that are arseholes that want to instigate trouble and,
there's a few of us that like loved. You could tell they were always the first ones out the door when their alarms went off. They were the first ones out when it kicked off on the wings. They wanted to be getting.
Yeah.
They enjoyed it. But on the whole... But also, I guess in Wandsworth, those guys are getting piss thrown in their face every other day. So they're probably not the most susceptible to, the most open to having a good chin wag with you. Because in the back of their mind, they're thinking this bloke might be flicking his shit at me in an hour's time. So when it goes to Rochester, that didn't happen as much. So they're like,
sorry to say this, but one guy got shit flicked on his lip Imagine how much your head would fall off if someone flicked shit on your lip.
I don't want to think about that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think it was one of those times where someone flicked open a flap and they flicked it off their cup, their plastic cup, and it got it flicked
on
his lip.
You know too much about this.
Disgusting. Imagine how fuming you'd be. You'd want
to... But that would, you're right, that would set the tone. If that happened to you once, you would... And we all get lumped in. So if one inmate does that, one offender does that to you, everyone else gets tarred with that brush.
And then you're
but that's how it works. But that's how it works. So when that kind of stuff happens in prison, like, yeah, they fuck you all off. Like, as in they'll... There's quite like a basic mentality, I think, there. So with a lot of them, you know. Well, not a lot, but some of them.
Yeah.
So in terms of other staff, apart from the people, like, patrolling the wings, you've got a unit called like the offender management unit, which is meant to be looking at progressing your sentence and stuff that we might talk about another time, that you've got a named offender supervisor, but you don't remember who they were or knowing them or having a relationship.
I think at Rochester, you knew who your OMU officer was because it was made apparent to you when you first came.
Right.
They'd tell you who it was and obviously they'd give you a sentence plan. So a sentence plan is where it's part of like your rehabilitation, where they'd give you maybe courses or whatever's suitable to your crime for you to complete before finishing your sentence. For me, I got given an in-cell pack that I just had to do inside myself.
Like a workbook.
Yeah, just a workbook, which I just did. I think it was a victim awareness report, so I just had to do it. Yeah, I just had to do it and hand it in as and when. I wasn't given a deadline or just had to do it before.
No contact with them.
Yeah,
I suppose that relationship for you with offender supervisor is not as important as someone going through parole who is having reports written about them and needs recommendations.
Yeah, I did have that.
And then what about other staff that you might have encountered, like chaplain, healthcare?
Chaplain. If you went to church on a Sunday, or if you were a Muslim, or you went to gym on a Friday, you'd have to have a relationship with your chaplain or imam, because I think they're the ones that can tick you off to attend. For a lot of people, going to a chaplain would be getting out your cell on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Some people would just be to go to church to worship. So you did have to have a relationship with them. So yeah, that was obviously a key relationship to have as well.
I think for some people that was, look, I'm not religious, so I didn't really have that. But I think for some it's like a softer relationship. You know, I think they was probably like...
More welfare.
It's a bit more like, kind of welfare. They weren't seen as, it wasn't like someone that was going to punish you. It was someone that you could, have a, there was a different dynamic.
Because sometimes when people were kicking off and like the govs couldn't control them, maybe like someone from the chaplaincy would come to talk to them. So that kind of shows the kind of relationship that they were meant to have with the inmates.
Is it the word pastoral? Is that what I'm looking for?
That's very good.
But you'd have that. So every now and then someone from the chaplaincy or would come round just to your cell, knock on the door, see if you had an issue, see if you wanted to talk about stuff. And I've mentioned before about how the lad in the cell next to me, who used to be in the army, thought this would be a good opportunity to have a 2.5-3 hour conversation with the imam about the do's and don'ts of the Afghan war and ISIS.
Sometimes people just use it to have someone to talk to as well, isn't it? Yeah, like a listener, isn't it? Like, they just use it to have someone.
I guess explain what a listener is.
Listeners, it's like a Samaritan.
Mm-hmm. It's run by the Samaritans.
Yeah, run by the Samaritans, who are inmates, they do their own training. So if someone's maybe struggling, maybe with mental health or something like that, they'd ring their bell and ask for a listener. A listener would...
24, it was 24/7.
Yeah, 24/7.
Call at any time. They'd be
called out to come to your cell on their own. Obviously, I don't know if the govs are allowed in the cell.
They were paired up, weren't they?
And then they could just talk about whatever. Sometimes people just use that just to have someone to come in their cell and talk to. But that was their job.
And then obviously, we haven't really spoken, like, at the top of the prison is the governor or director, if it's a private prison. But yeah, you call the other people govs, which is confusing. There is the ultimate governor.
Yeah, screw.
And what was your experience of staff being involved in like the black economy of the prison running?
Me personally, because I wasn't involved in it, I didn't have much hands-on contact.
Slight smile. But it is
common knowledge that a lot of the bad stuff that were happening in jails did stem from the govs. Like, how are phones getting into jails? Like, the security is quite airtight, so there's got to be more than one way for it to come through. Obviously, there's throwovers and stuff like that, but ultimately a lot of things do come through the officers.
Through that way?
Yeah.
You didn't see it yourself,
I didn't see it, but you'd obviously hear about it.
Yeah, you hear stories of... I never heard it as much as, oh, that screw's bent or whatever, or like, but there were definitely enough rumours knocking around. And so whether it was with screws or whether you'd get like contractors who were on the wing. So that was who I think one of the, heard anecdotally that was one of the like plumbers basically that was allowed on was doing pretty regular trips.
Yeah, they get paid a lot of money for it as well. So that's kind of what motivates them to do it as well. Because we're in the jails now, there's a lot of young screws, young officers who may not be on the most amount of money. They're very vulnerable. So they could be groomed by prisoners as well.
Yeah, if you're on 20 grand a year and someone goes, do you want to make 2 grand cash once a week? You ask 10 people, I don't know how many of those are going to say yes to it, you know, enough. You know, they're only human. And I think that's it. So people did, I didn't, but I think people do cultivate those kind of relationships with people.
I mean, I guess you were cultivating your own positive relationships with them that... Like, it's such a discretionary system that you're probably getting things.
Because even
if it's not contraband, you're getting perks from relationships you had with staff.
Like some girls were bringing like cakes and stuff.
I got a McDonald's.
Yeah, like that's seen as contraband as well. But imagine if you can have someone on toast like that to bring you in that, maybe you can get them to bring in other stuff.
Yeah, slightly scaling. Like a lot of the lads that worked on the gym were getting protein and stuff, like supplements brought in from there, because you could get stuff on the canteen. It was expensive. And shit.
Yeah, and that just shows the govs not what they can get away with as well.
Do that, and then you'd hear stories of govs bringing roids and stuff in. That was quite a common one you'd hear in gyms and stuff, in the like prison gyms at that.
Really?
Because a lot of lads go in there, they want to get hench, and so like steroids and growth. And
what does hench mean?
Hench. A big.
Oh, okay, cool. I just wanted to know.
Is that not what I'm missing?
No, yeah. I would have. We used to use the word hench. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Is it?
What do you call it?
Hench as well, but I thought, I never knew posh people say hench. You say hench?
Well, hang on, you posh people, I mean.
What?
Yeah.
Never mind. I didn't know you used that word.
Just had to check if you had a different meaning for it.
I thought you would say buff.
Buff.
Yeah,
buff's like fit.
No, it's different.
Like, no, it's in buff. Like, isn't buff like
muscle? Like she's buffing.
But buff would be like they'd have to be attractive. Buff would be like they'd be attractive.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, buff is.
Oh,
yeah.
Hench doesn't have to be attractive.
Okay. No, hench.
Fair enough. It's probably like.
Well, I've learned something new today, man. Thank you.
Your own lingo.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, cool. Part of the service, mate.
Cool. Right, on that note, should we call it a day on that one?
Yeah, we should. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi guys, it's Rob here. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just to give you a quick reminder that if you haven't already, to subscribe to make sure you get the new episodes as they come out every Monday, and leave us a review with any of your feedback wherever you listen to the pod. You can also get us on our Twitter and Instagram accounts, which are at Banged Up Podcast. You can send us any questions you want for our weekly Q&A, and also catch some other bits and pieces like excerpts from my diary. Okay, thanks very much. Catch you soon.